Well, welcome to the Theatre Voice Forum on Children's Theatre at the Theatre Museum in Covent Garden in London. My name's Heather Neal. I'm a journalist and critic, and I was for a number of years arts editor of the Times Educational Supplement. I think a lot of the people here are very well versed in children's theatre, so I'm very pleased to see so many distinguished and expert people, and I hope you will take part in the discussion afterwards. But on my right, I have a panel of very well-known practitioners in children's theatre. Furthest away is John Retallack, who is Artistic Director of Company of Angels. He was a teacher before he began the Actors Touring Company in 1977. In 1989, he became Artistic Director of the Oxford Stage Company. And while he was there, he introduced Making the Future, programmes of work for young people. In 1996, he hosted a series of labs for writers for young people at the Arts Lab, which led to some 40 new scripts, many of which have been produced since. And then in 2001, he founded the Company of Angels specifically to produce new and experimental work for young audiences. There have been many successful productions already from Company of Angels, but Hannah and Hannah has had an international success and is already well known by audiences, not just those normally interested in young people's theatre. It's about the conflict between locals and asylum seekers in Margate, as seen through the eyes of two teenage girls. Sitting next to John is David Wood, probably one of the best known people in children's theatre, I would think, the author of over 50 plays, an actor, member of the Magic Circle, founder of the company, the touring company Whirligig. He's the author of Theatre for Children, A Guide to Writing, Adapting, Directing and Acting, which just about covers it, doesn't it? It's everything you need to know. And he's also the chair of Action for Children's Arts. Next to him is Annie Wood. No relation, by the way. No idea where there are Woods in children's theatre. Who became the Artistic Director of Polka Theatre for Children in 2002, having worked in children's theatre for 15 years before that. Her productions of The Red Balloon and Martha travelled to North America, including to Broadway. Polka is a designated children's theatre, and it's celebrating 25 years of working from its base in Wimbledon. But it's also been touring recently. Bad Girls has just come back to London, Jacqueline Wilson's book adapted by Vicky Ireland, who was the previous artistic director of Polka Theatre and is with us in the audience. So, your panel. Can I ask you, first of all, each to say, quite briefly, how it was you became hooked on children's theatre? Because you've all done a lot of other things. Let's do it in order. John, start with you as you're furthest away.
It wasn't so much children's theatre. Well, I suppose it was children and teenagers. But there was a grant of about £900 that was offered competitively by the Arts Council in about 92 to go to Europe and see theatre for young people there. I went off for 3 weeks. And I went to the Den Bosch Festival in Holland, amongst other things. And whilst there, I wrote a diary of it at the time, and I was just saw a range of work for children and adolescents that, or as ados, as they call them in France, ados, that really knocked me for six. I was in the middle of running Oxford Stage Company, and I thought this was some of the most exciting work I'd ever seen. And what took me aback was that it was happening in gymnasiums and school halls in the middle of the day, with no artificial lighting at all, and school parties watching. That I didn't think I'd rediscover some magic in theatre through that. But ever since then, I have found the link between the lives lived by young people and theatre to express it, an irresistible source of to create new work and new schemes.
Thank you. David, you were an actor. I remember seeing you in If, the film If. He was a rebel boy in If, the Lindsay Anderson film, before all this began. Mm.
Well, it wasn't really before it all began. When I was 12, I started doing magic at children's parties. for, you know, a bit of money. And and I think that taught me, looking back, how children react en masse, which is very different from the way children react in ones and twos. And I far prefer lots and lots of children in a big room than one or two children in a small room. I'm much better with a lot of them than I am with a few of them. And so that carried on. And when I went to, I wanted to go to drama school. Headmaster said, don't go to university. Try to go to Bristol and do French and drama. So I didn't get in there. And he said, well, we'll try and get you into Oxford. And I got into Oxford, which was very lucky because I did no work at all, but managed to do more theatre than I would have ever done, even at drama school. And while I was there, I went to see a pantomime, a big commercial pantomime at the new theatre, Oxford. And nobody else would go with me. No other student would come with me because it was very, you know, naff to go to a pantomime. But I rather liked that sort of entertainment. But as I sat there, I thought this one particularly, I mean, really, you could write the storyline if there was one on the back of a postage stamp. I mean, there was no story at all, and children need a story. And furthermore, towards the end, there was a star comedian who, in the obligatory half-hour spot that they gave them in those days at the end, started telling a joke, and it was a slightly off-colour joke. It wasn't blue. The children probably didn't understand it, but it got a laugh from a group of housewives, and this was a matinee, full house, afternoon show. And these ladies laughed, whereupon this comedian walked forward, leant over the footlights, which there were in the 60s, and he said, come on, let's get the kids out of here, then we can get started. And I had a very strange sort of physical reaction to this. I was about 19, 20 years old. And my hackles rose, literally. I blushed in this dark room. I thought, how dare this man, it's full of children, how dare he say that he would prefer to be doing his late night cabaret act when he's being paid a lot of money to entertain these children. That made me think, what is there for children these days? And there was very little, you see, back in the 60s. You could see Peter Pan if you were in London, but nowhere else. It wasn't allowed to be done anywhere else. There was the odd Toad of Toad Hall, there was the odd Wizard of Oz, maybe Alice in Wonderland. Nicholas Stewart Gray had one or two little, I mustn't say little, but they were small-scale productions of fairy tales and so on, but there was very little happening. So by the time I got to Rep in Worcester in 1967, and somebody actually said, would I write a play for children, I was ready. And I honestly believe that I was meant to do it. You know, I believe that that was what I was put here to do. It sounds very boring, but I've never really wanted to do anything else.
Well, we're very glad that that's what happened.
Well, I don't know.
Thank you. Annie.
Well, unlike John and David, there wasn't a moment of, like, inspiration or realisation that I have to work in children's theatre. I guess I got hooked in it because I just kept getting asked to do it. And in a way, I trained as a drama teacher, and I hadn't really had any theatre experience at all when I was a child growing up. I lived in the west coast of Scotland. I think somebody came over once and did something in the school, but it's a vague, distant kind of memory. But when when I did the first show, it was almost by accident, really. You know, I never went to teaching. I went to youth theatre, and I did plays with young people. And then you just get the job. And then, you know, then when you get one job, and if you do something quite well, then you get asked to do another one. And then, but what happened then was somebody once said to me, well, when are you going to come do an adult play then? And I said, well, actually, I don't really want to do an adult play because, you know, it felt very sort of cerebral and quite text-based. And I'd sort of learnt to love this visual, imaginative world of children's theatre. And I do think you can. You need to be more visual in children's theatre, particularly if you're playing to very young audiences, which, you know, I like to create work for that age. So, you know, it allows for more playing. And I guess I also really started to really enjoy the audience. And I think children are the most wonderful audience because they come to the theatre very open-minded and open-hearted, and they're not cynical. They don't go, right, come on now, entertain me. I'm talking about young kids. There is an age that they do get like that, that's for sure. You know, but they're very open and... And they're very open and they're very hungry and they're very happy when they're in the theatre and they're very honest, and that's what I love as well. If they're bored, you know, they'll really let you know. It'll be like mass exodus to the toilet or, you know, into the sweetie bag. So, you know, I think that I love the audience, and that's what hooked me, really.
Between you, the three of you, you make theatre for children and adolescents for quite a wide age range, in fact, don't you? And two of you have written a good deal, and one of you encourages new writing, well, the other two encourage it as well. Is there a problem about programming for young people, though, in that you have to address the parent or the teacher first and hook them before you get your young person in? Is it difficult to get people interested in new writing for young people, or is it too easy to go back on to fall back on adaptations? I mean, we should say that, I mean, Polka does some very good adaptations, some of which are by David. We just had James and the Giant Peach at Polka, mm-hmm. and now you've got Bad Girls. But you've also done new writing. Is it a problem?
It's incredibly difficult. It absolutely is. You're right. The parents and the teachers are the people who have got the power to buy the tickets and make the decision for the child. I think the only circumstance where that doesn't happen is with Jacqueline Wilson, where it is complete pressure from the child. They pick up the leaflet. They go, I want to go and see this, you know, because I love it so much. I mean, at Polka, we firmly believe there is a great place for adaptations of classics and contemporary work. But new writing is the heart of what we're doing. And there's a lot of underground work happening all the time that's not seen, really, of development of new writing. But it is so hard to get the audience. And I understand all the reasons why, you know, because it's expensive to go to the theatre. And, you know, if you're going to pay £50 for a family of five to go and see a show, you, as a parent, you're maybe more inclined to go for something that you know rather than something that you don't know. It's that risk factor. So, in a way, I think we have to find a way to bring families, parents, teachers on a journey with us of exploration and, you know, excitement about new writing. But it's the only way to really see what's happening today, right now, through new writing. And that's why it's really, really important to us. Mm. But it is so hard. I mean, we did John and I did a project earlier this year, and John wrote a new play, Sweet Peter. It was a play aimed at teenagers as well, but it was a wonderful, wonderful play, and it attracted nobody. It was so difficult to get people in, and really disheartening to have a theatre that's empty, to have a show that's empty, for the actors, for everybody in the theatre. And, you know, everyone wants a buzzy place of work. Everybody wants the shows to be popular. But, you know, we have now found a balance where we can afford to take two risks a year out of seven with our shows and with new writing. And we'll keep doing that. And maybe there'll be a change in the tide. I'm not sure. You know, maybe it'll happen.
Yeah,
David, you've done both new plays and adaptations.
Yeah,
and you've actually worked with Cameron McIntosh as a producer in the West End, haven't you? So.
Well, pre-Cats, Cameron, this strange little man with glasses, came up to me at a party once and said, are you David Woods? I said, yes. He said, well, he said, did you write a thing called The Owl and the Pussycat Went to Sea? So I said, yes. So he said, well, he said, it's the most wonderful children's show I've ever seen. If there's ever any chance of me working with you, I would be so flattered and I would be so honoured. and sure enough, we did for about 10 years, and we did The Gingerbread Man in the West End for about seven years. But no, the point I would make here is that, yeah, we all have this terrible problem, that titles, and we all feel we have to do the big titles. I went through a phase of being of not wanting to do adaptations at all, because I really felt this was wrong. Even The Gingerbread Man is not an adaptation. It's got a good commercial title, but the story has nothing to do with the fairy tale. But when we started Whirligig, and Whirligig toured for 25 years, we finished last year, we decided to call it a day. And what was exciting about it was that when we got a reputation, and particularly in certain theatres, I mean, extraordinary, like the Civic Theatre Darlington, for instance, we were very big there. The Palace Theatre Newark, which nobody's ever heard of, the first year we went there, we emptied the place. Within 3 years, we were selling out 10 performances for the week. And the reason was that they were trusting Whirligig. And it didn't matter what the title of the play was. And it was rather like, say, you know, Ballet Rombert. People say, oh, Rombert's coming next week. And so they'd all book it. It doesn't matter what the play, the show is, what the ballet is. And my great dream was that we could expand that to such an extent that we could do work in all sorts of different size spaces. And simply that word Whirligig would become a passport to big audiences coming in. Having said that, it doesn't always work. And nobody can really tell you why. And it's often things that you think are going to do really well. Even one of the last things with Whirligig we did was I adapted The Sheep Pig, which was filmed, as you know, as Babe. Hugely successful movie. Very, very popular. Classic book. All the teachers knew it. And we had 15 children who were brought in wherever we played, playing the sheep, a flock of sheep. It was a big production, and I said to myself, it was really rather good. Got wonderful reviews, and it just didn't work. People just didn't come and see it. And you'd ring up schools and say, excuse me, but you know, we've got this show here, you know, why haven't you come to see it? And head teachers would say, oh, yeah, no, well, we've got the video here. They've seen the video. And then, of course, you do despair because you realise that it all comes from the top and it's got nothing to do with what the children want to see, which is the point that Heather was making beforehand. So there's no magic formula, but my own wish would be that new writing was not just accepted, but became the norm, because there is this ridiculous thing whereby the majority of people assume that children's theatre equals adaptation, full stop. That's what it is, which makes the craft of playwriting for children slightly tarnished in people's view. Oh, well, they just cobble together something from the book. And it's much more of a craft than that. But even more of a craft is the original playwriting. And why shouldn't children have original plays just as grown-ups do? Grown-ups have adaptations, yes, but they have real, original, exciting new plays. And why shouldn't children?
Well, John, your company is devoted to producing new and experimental work.
Yeah, so. Well, I think doing new work, new writing or new devised pieces, whatever it might be, is always hard. I mean, of course, whether it's for children or grown-ups anywhere, I mean, it's always, unless you have a fantastically, you know, I mean, obviously if a big national company puts on a new play, that will draw a great deal of attention, that will bring people in, but, you know, it's always a struggle to pioneer new work, and you have to one has to take that on and make it work in the circumstances that you have. I mean, you know, Annie talks about, you know, in order to keep that theatre functioning and working, you know, it's very important that it takes in a certain income every year, and that has to work. And you actually gave a quantity to how you'd work. I've run a theatre and I've run a touring company, a big and a small one, and I've certainly chosen to run a company which is, we describe sometimes as a bit more like an ideas box. I mean, we're just a Therese Ariosto and I, producer and director. That is really the staff of the company. And we're aware when we've got something new that we want to promote, we have to calculate and think very hard just exactly how we're going to launch that. I mean, I feel that there is now in Edinburgh Festival is the truly probably the great marketplace now. I mean, the Edinburgh Festival manages now to be front page news, you know, at least in the broadsheets, sustains that over about 3 weeks. And talking to some people who've been up there this year with new work for children, it's gone very well, and there's a lot of critical attention. And then they've made the route down to London, played the Riverside, somewhere like that. And you have to be patient and be prepared to build a reputation for a new piece of work. And I'd interestingly say that Sweet Peter, that was its first phase. It's playing there in Polka, and in fact we'll be preparing a second phase for that production. And you really do have to take your time over it. And